KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. The franchise has talked a lot about it. Even people in the media have been glowing about Shoddy's culture. What does it actually mean to y'all, to us, to the fan base? So I'm going to give you a few examples. This is Tyler Smith and talking about Shoddy. He's got an understanding of the most important room in the building, and it's the locker room. Complete through all the ups and downs and adversity we've been through. I really enjoyed this part of the journey. Establish that culture in some of the things we want to build upon as our team and our family unit. Let's go to CeeDee Lamb. Our ability to be professional, he holds us to a high standard, and obviously discipline is necessary. And he's referencing himself when he goes, when we acted out of pocket for him, it was more of just proclaiming his dominance, establishing a culture here and what he expects out of each and every one of us. And I feel like he is very clear with that this season. And if you want another one, Dak. I credit him for being the same, being consistent, and it's something that he talks about. But to actually watch him be consistent and be the same man through the adversity and now through some success, right? He's a hell of a leader. He's the right guy for the job. We're following him. I can give you more. We'll stop right there. Tyler Smith, CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott. And again, I think it's really interesting how many people in the media have been supportive of this and picked up on it. So that's a great thing. All of those are seemingly great things. What did you feel like, if at all, it made a difference this year? Will it make a difference in the future? And do you think that matters to the fan base, or they're like, I don't really care about your culture, win the game? Because I'm really not sure.
Because somebody said culture is an issue when you don't win, and no one cares. Look at the Chiefs' off-field issues. I don't think the off-field issues are part of the culture.
So you're okay. Ooh, interesting.
I think the culture of a business, the culture of employment, the culture of a locker room is how the guys in the locker room work together, hold each other accountable, don't let anything slide. And you can kind of go look at a winning culture. The Patriots, they had a winning culture despite having problems off field.
True.
The Cowboys in the 90s had a winning culture despite having chaos off the field.
So culture
and a lot
focused.
And a lot of that chaos off the field was because the culture bled out onto the street with them.
Right.
Or into the White House with them, if you will. I think the culture is you walk into the building and you know what's expected of you. Instead of, man, I'm really not sure why I'm here. You walk into the Ray Lewis, Ed Reed room, you knew what you were there to work on and work for. Everybody talks about that. That was a winning culture that they put in place. And Kevin, guess what? Something happened off field with Ray Lewis.
Yes.
Not a lot of people know about this story.
I think they do.
But I know one time he did say that if the NFL wasn't around, crime would rise.
Right.
So I don't think that culture is winning. I don't think culture is losing. You can have a losing culture. That's a bunch of dudes that are walking in there going, I'm collecting a paycheck because I'm here. Culture is something of the expectation. When you walk in today, is that you're looking for excellence, and that's it. And I think that's what culture means to me. And it can mean a lot of different things to other people. But if you're saying that's okay, it's not that big of a deal, whenever those things that do matter are a real big deal, then that's a losing culture. The other side of it is saying, I'm not going to work any less because I think somebody on the other side's working harder than me. That's a winning culture.
You know, that's really... Man, that is really interesting to me. I like that you said that because, I mean, it was one of the things. I asked for y'all's perspective. And so that discussion of culture kind of like being in the locker room, on the field, in practice, as opposed to all that other stuff is fascinating.
I think, Kevin, if you look around a locker room that's losing,
yeah,
you can see why.
Yeah, I get you.
Like you'll see what the guys that are giving the extra, you can see the difference in the ones that aren't. Kevin, there was a group of guys on this team while the Cowboys were losing a few years ago. We were told that you could watch those guys leave early. They were the last ones in and the first ones to leave. I do like Dak's approach. I think Dak has the right mindset. He says all the right things regarding what he wants out of this. I don't think everybody that's been in that room wants all those same things a lot of the times. And finding a way as the head coach... Kurt Cignetti is a great example of getting everybody to buy in that we can do this it's just going to take you and you and you doing all these things. That's where the difference in culture, I think, is. Knowing that Kevin doesn't need a pep talk, he needs a kick in the ass.
Yeah.
Knowing that Alec doesn't need, I'm still trying to figure Alec out. But knowing what everybody in the room kind of needs, that's the head coach's job. Do I need to talk to that guy? Do I need to put my arm around him? That's part of his culture. And he's establishing, I care about you. You guys care about each other. Take care of each other. And don't let anybody kick you in the mouth. And don't let anybody kick your teammate in the mouth either. Those things matter.
Okay. Alec?
It's not there yet, though, for this Cowboys team.
Okay, and we're going to get more to that in just one second. Alec, I want to go to you. What do you think the importance is for culture, and do you feel like the Cowboys are moving in the right direction? And I feel like that's all I can say. I can't say they've done it. They didn't make the playoffs, and so that's going to be ultimately the question is, if you have the most happy locker room in the world and you don't make the playoffs, eventually people will be like, don't care.
It's a weird place to be, because when you're a team that's still trying to grow and develop, you're not winning right now. It's easy to use it as a crutch. You know, we're trying to build culture. We're trying to find our identity. Those buzzwords, you know, it's like, what's your goal when you know you're not going to have a winning record this year?
But you get the sense that shoddy, like, really, really means that.
Yes, and I think that's where you have to really pay attention to the people who are actually talking about those things, that are trying to instill those things. Is sometimes you can tell it is just kind of fraudulent. It is kind of just throwing words out there because you don't know what else to say. Like, let's just say Arthur Smith, when he was the head coach of the Falcons and things weren't going well, I would listen to his comments post game and say, that's fake anger. That's him trying to drum up an audience to believe that something he's saying is true. Brian Schottenheimer, you can tell, by the way, he benched CD and George Pickens in the Raiders game. You know, I know it's just one possession, but no nonsense. The way that Trayvon Diggs is not on the team anymore. You know, the way that some of these guys talk about the messages that he instills, I believe it 100%. But at the same time, when things aren't going well, I feel like in sports in general, but especially football, it gets used as a crutch too much. So as a fan, it's nice to hear at the beginning of the year. It was nice to hear in his introductory press conference after he got the job. It was really great to hear, because I thought Mike McCarthy's culture was okay. Like, I thought in a relationship standpoint, it was great. In a winning standpoint, in a seriousness perspective, it didn't exist. But I get the total opposite vibe, where I think they mean everything they say. Just to Corey's credit, especially talking about the defense and whatnot, I just don't think the players are good enough to actually win those games. So they have the right mindset, but it's like, you guys can have the right mindset to show up and have the best show in the history of radio, but just because you have the right mindset doesn't mean that you planned out the content.
Or they have the talent.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you have to supplement, and everything has to line up. It has to be perfect. That's why it worked with the Chiefs for so many years, because they had the talent, but they had Andy Reid. They had Patrick Mahomes. They had the guys leading the charge that demanded the excellence every single day, because they knew they were that good.
Also, take into consideration Nick Saban's run at Alabama. Now, did he have the best talent? Yes.
Yes.
Why did he have the best talent? He built something that people wanted to play for.
Yeah.
Maybe he had the money, too, that he was paying, or that they didn't, you know. Well, but the other part of it is, how many coaches that have left his organization, how many players talk about rat poison?
Yes, a lot.
These are the little things that I mean with culture, where everybody thinks a certain way. Whether it's because they were manipulated or brainwashed or whatever, they all think a certain way, and they're all invested in it. And finding the people to put their hand in there and mix it up with them, that's what you got to find.
And that's where I think kind of some of the chicken and egg conversation comes in, because if Alabama would have consistently been pretty good, 10-3, like, would that have caught on with everybody? Or is it the fact that they won those championships that everyone's like, well, that must be it? Or was it having that attitude that allowed you to win the championships? And I think Shoddy,
I think Saban's history, because he did win at LSU, too.
Sure. I mean, he's won it, like, big-time programs.
Yeah, he kind of proved that he could build that thing,
yeah,
right? build that silo.
But I think it's very clear that Shoddy believes this is what comes first.
Yep.
That your culture doesn't develop because you won. You develop the culture, and then you win.
So does Ted Lasso.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, kind of. Well, more experience with the game. But, you know, in terms of the attitude. And so I see people texting in from the 214. We want wins. From the 972, screw the culture, play better football. So you see there are plenty of people in the fan base who don't care.
Yes, no, the play better football's the next step in the foundation.
No, I agree, but like I think that's one of the reasons that some fans do believe is because, well, that you don't really have a choice. Your coach right now, the person who is guiding this team more or less, he believes that you have to establish the culture, and that is the only way you can win.
I don't think next year he's going to be talking about culture.
Because you think they're going to be better?
No, I think that he's going to say we did. I came in year one and told the guys what was expected of them. The culture should now percolate through the guys. The leaders that I have in the locker room, they should be the ones taking care of the culture. I don't have to do that anymore. I have to be the one with the hammer. Continuing to drive home, these are the things that are expected. I have to do that. But also those guys have to be accountable to each other, and the leaders have to hold them accountable. Kevin, we talked to many coaches. They're like, look, I can go yell at my players all I want, but if the players in the room aren't patrolling themselves, I have no power.
Yeah.
I need them to spread the message for me. And so that's part of it, too. You need the Dacks, the Lambs, the whoever your defensive leader is, to, maybe Quinnen Williams, to be the guys that are in the locker room saying, as Charles Haley, you're not good enough, come work with me, I'll put the work in with you.
Is there somebody else? Do you need the Jerry to come in there and be like, it's his say?
Because Jerry has put such a big imprint on him, on the organization as himself being the face of it, yes. In most instances, I don't think you have to. Do I think that in the Chiefs organization that their owner is like, I have to go in the locker room and say things?
Yeah, Andy Reid's the guy.
Yeah.
You better not piss him off.
You know who it is. And that's why I've asked Jerry multiple times, when are you going to go get in somebody's ass about this? And he's like, if I felt like I had to, I would. Well, dude, you kind of have to because you're the guy. You've made yourself the GM. You put yourself in that position. You are the one that everybody answers to. So if you're going to do that, you have to be the one that goes and does it. It seems as if he's giving a lot of the reins to Shoddy.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like, is he's given a lot of that reign to Brian Schottenheimer because he understands how important leadership is in that room.
Man, it is fascinating how different people's definitions of culture is. And I love the feedback from the 210. Leading the league in penalties isn't a good culture. From the 443, culture won that second Eagles game because the Mike McCarthy team lets go of the rope down 21-0. And so it's fascinating, like specific instances, specific series, specific players, specific games is what people have chosen to focus in on. But I think you're right.
And that's part of the consistency, I think, that Shoddy's talking about. Not just in play, in game. Across the season, are we showing up for work the same way?
Yeah.
Kevin, we worked at a place together that was bad culture.
Yes.
We tried to make it a good culture, and I thought it was.
Yeah.
What we had going was a really good culture. But you saw how many people hated showing up to work.
Yes. True.
You want to show up to work and know that you're doing something special that day. And that's what Shoddy wants this team to do.
And I do kind of wonder if, like, let's say next year in 2 years or whatever, the team goes 12-5. They grind out a divisional game win, like 17-14 or something like that. Make it to the NFC Championship game for the first time ever. How many people are immediately going to say it was the culture? You know, like you saw this start in 2025 and built up to it. But the flip side is true. You go 5-12, have the greatest culture in the world. Everyone's going to be like, yeah, see, who cares?
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a winning culture. It was a losing culture.
Yeah, you're onto something there. We're the KNC masterpiece. Woo, we might need to revisit this.
Kevin, this is very similar to the chart, all right? You got winning cultures,
culture chart?
Mediocre cultures, and losing cultures. That's where we are at the moment.
Okay.
We'll see how this chart goes.
I expect to see the chart. If you can mix in the Culture Club at some point, that'd be great too. We're the KNC Masterpiece. Stop it. Right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, we move into the Expressway, the biggest team and individual player disappointments of the season. Plus, the Tuesday tailgate has a changing of the college football guard arrived. Next on The Fan.
Heavy tight end set with Tonyan in motion. Oladokun pats the ball and loses it. Punch! stretched out behind midfield. Wilson forced the fumble. Still a scramble for it. It's Raider football.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. The biggest team and or individual player disappointments of the NFL season. 877-881-1053. We can maybe get into playoff power rankings if we have the time. And then we're also going to do the Tuesday tailgate. So a jam-packed segment right here. We got a lot of stuff. All right.
Tailgate.
Now, I think what makes a lot of sense just in terms of the teams, but I want to hear y'all's teams and individual players that you thought were the biggest disappointments of the NFL season. I feel like it's easy to say the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs, as a team, were the biggest disappointment of the NFL season.
Yeah, because they're supposed to be good.
For sure.
I think there are other teams that definitely disappointed their fan base a lot more.
Who would those teams be to you?
Give me a second, Kevin.
Okay, because I've got three more.
Okay, go ahead.
I think the Bengals,
okay,
the Lions, and the Packers.
Okay.
Now, if you're the Packers, you can make an argument.
You're still in the playoffs.
Yeah, that you're still in the playoffs, and if you win, that could change the perspective. But it does feel very much like the Packers are stumbling going into the playoffs. And so I would say those four are my four.
The Lions definitely pop up for me on this, for sure. The Lions, for sure. I think the Cardinals fan base did not expect them to be that bad. They were like, we're going to be bad, but we're not going to be three wins. Well,
that's going to end with a different coach, probably a different quarterback. I mean, all kinds of stuff.
The Commanders also. Did you say the Commanders?
Ooh, no, that's a good one.
Commanders would be my number two team. I think the Bengals, really good one. But the Lions and the Commanders stand out for me because the Lions had Super Bowl aspirations.
Yeah.
The Commanders were on the trajectory of being the thorn in the Philadelphia Eagles' side and standing in the way of the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys ended up with a better record than them, and now they're dismantling their coaching staff.
So I'm going to take one of the teams you said and one of the teams I said, the Commanders and the Bengals. Do you think those teams can kind of reconcile it in their mind of like, well, my quarterback wouldn't have gotten hurt, then it could have been a different deal. You know what I'm saying?
When it comes to
both of their defenses sucked.
Yeah,
though.
I just needed to look up the NFL standings to remember exactly who sucked. When it comes to the Bengals, their defense was again atrocious. Their defense was atrocious, and it's been that way a couple different times. The offense can be productive, but if your defense can't stop anybody, it's gonna suck.
Yeah.
So the Bengals, the fact that they're bringing back their entire coaching staff, they're like, nah, we're not making any changes. What?
Which I have to admit, I was surprised.
Now, they did have some problems in talent, the linebacking crew. They needed to grow up a lot faster than they expected. But the Bengals, that's one right there that I don't think can look at back and say everything's fine there.
I mean, and the Lions, Dan Campbell said he gave himself an F for this season, so I feel like it's fair to say the Lions go on that list.
Well, I mean, I think Dan Campbell looks at it as A or F.
That is probably true.
And every year so far has been an F because he hasn't won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, from the 903, the Vikings. Another person brought up the Colts. No, those two are interesting because I think they're disappointing for different reasons, right? Like the Vikings year over year, they're like, hey, we could take the success we had in the regular season, plug J.J. McCarthy in there and rock and roll with that. Whereas the Colts were the story of the first half of the regular season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they were the thing.
Yeah, but
that
nobody
was
had
happening.
Any expectations for them to start
and
at all.
Everyone was kind of just waiting for them to fall off, and obviously they did, but part of that is injury driven as well. And then, man, from the 903, from the 806, from another 682, hello, Baltimore Ravens. That's a great answer as well. And
man,
I had an NFL overreaction to reality.
But you were holding on to hope.
I did.
That the Ravens would make that run and because all the analytics said they were going to.
Yeah.
And you're kind of holding on to that. I think the Ravens were too. They were like, this division stinks.
I still thought for most of the night on Sunday, I was like, they'll figure out a way to win. And I think part of that is like what I think is more interesting. I don't give an F about Aaron Rodgers making another playoff run. I don't care at all. But Lamar Jackson, seeing him get it like another shot to try to get to the Super Bowl, I would have been invested in. And now that opportunity is gone.
I wonder how many people out there disagree with you.
I bet probably a good amount.
I'm with you on Aaron Rodgers. He's had his time. I've watched the Steelers team all year.
Yeah.
I've watched him stand in power position with his hands on his hips while other people are out there fighting. Dude, leave the field. Let them run a play without you if you're not even going to participate in it. You just put your team in a one-man hole. I didn't like that this year. So I'm not in looking for him, but I don't necessarily think I was looking for Lamar to have another shot either. I was kind of hopeful for what we're getting, and that is a new crop of dudes.
And I think that's what makes it so much fun is when you get – is the time – did Allen, did Jackson, did they just miss it? Like, you were good job, but you missed your window. Now it's Knicks, it's May, and that could still turn out to play out to be true. But I love, like, that kind of thing is super fascinating to me. Now – if you got other teams, let's definitely hear it. Individual players. I'm going to lead off with this one. And I know at the end of the year, people are going to be like, oh, he almost got 2,000 yards. To me, it's Ashton Jeanty. Man, I thought he was going to come in, even with the Raiders. And I thought he was going to kick ass and take names. And man, oh man, did he struggle. He showed some flashes in two of those last three games, for sure. But look at the lead up to those games. 15 carries for 31 yards, 10 carries for 30 yards, 9 carries for 35 yards. In the span of three games, he got a total of 96 yards on 34 carries. And you saw those struggles in game one, where 19 carries, 38 yards. And you saw it. He was just getting stuffed. And so outside of the Chicago game, which gave you some hope, man, he had a tough go of it. And I know a big part of that is because of his organization and his offensive line. But I really thought he was going to be badass from the word go.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely blame a lot of it on the fact that they didn't have a good bunch of good red oaks out there.
Right.
Maybe he has some dumb red oaks out there that are on his offensive line. But I didn't think that they gave him enough places, but you did see it at Boise State where he was able to do
overcome
a lot with a little. Was it against the best opponents all the time?
No.
Not necessarily. And so it is the NFL where things are a lot different. I thought Pete Carroll would have a lot more of a, hey, we can do this. Obviously, when Brock Bowers gets injured, your passing game short shrinks. Jacoby Myers didn't want to be there anymore because he was like, Geno Smith stinks.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think there are people that drafted Ashton Jeanty expecting this dude's going to be an explosive running back. I don't think that thing's there yet. I don't think it's built yet.
Are there particular players y'all want to focus in on? Because I've got more if not.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Alec, I'm going to give you a shot. Any particular player you thought was disappointing this year? Before we get back to my list of running folks down,
I'll
do it constructively.
Oh, it sounds like you got a hit list. Running folks down.
There's three.
No, he definitely has lists that he keeps track of.
Hit list.
Oh, for sure.
I would say Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
From the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know.
He was going to be the dude.
Yeah, he was supposed to be, and I still think he will be. I just think he's a product of new system, new coach. Everybody's trying to figure everything out, and it's more of let's win the game as organically as we can rather than force feed the football to our best player, which I understand, but I really thought he was going to evolve into that. Like, is he a top five receiver in the league?
And think about where they're at. If I told you going into the season, the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to be 13-4, and Trevor Lawrence is going to have rediscovered his vibe. Wouldn't you have thought, holy crap, Brian Thomas is going to have 1,500 yards and 14 touchdowns or something?
100%. I thought he was going to get so much volume. And with the Liam Cohen offense, I thought he would put up the dazzling numbers, too. So I really thought he was going to be the centerpiece of that offense, but really everybody has contributed on that team.
Now, go ahead.
I drafted him and I didn't want to.
Okay.
So was he really a disappointment if I drafted him but didn't want to because I know what he is? But then when you look at what Pittsburgh got out of him, you got to feel like DK Metcalf was a bit of a disappointment.
Oh, yeah.
He had 850 yards, 6 touchdowns. And I know a lot with that offense is a struggle. DK Metcalf is not what you think he is. We've discussed that, on many different levels.
That has been a long-held opinion of this show.
Many different levels. He had a 1,300-yard season. That was great. And then he's had some subpar seasons after that. 850 for what they paid him, for what George Pickens did, I think that there would be a lot of people that would definitely say that DK Metcalf was a letdown this year.
I mean, if you want to factor this in, didn't have him at the most important time of the season when you really needed him because of things that
happened. But you got in the playoffs because you beat the team that didn't deserve
yes,
it.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's stick with wide receivers. Terry McLaurin. And this is something that I wonder if this is going to be an albatross for the Commanders. What did we talk about before he signed that deal? We did our positional breakdown of the best players in the NFL and how many of them were 30 or over. And if you looked at consistently wide receivers, man, that was not a good track record. And Terry McLaurin's like, well, let me see if I can. He literally was like, I'm aware. Let me see if I can break that. And what happens almost immediately? In fact, it might have been immediately. He got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help. He hadn't missed a game in 4 years. And you can't help but wonder, he turned 30. By the time the next season starts, he'll be about to turn 31. If this is going to be something where you paid him on what he had done and not on what you thought he was going to do.
Yeah, yes. It was a very bad place to be. Now, you also thought, I think in Washington, they were thinking, guys, this year is another, like, we're going to keep going.
For sure.
So if he had a bad year, this kind of goes back to your culture question. If he had a bad year and the team was winning, would anybody care about it? Probably not.
Yeah.
But they thought the reason they brought him back, Kevin, I don't know if I ever was like, you have to bring back Terry McLaurin. I've been very honest. I think Terry McLaurin's a fantastic receiver. I like him. I thought for years he struggled, or he did well without a good quarterback, and finally he had a good quarterback. And then this year, that happened. So it does look bad. I think that the Washington fans would definitely say they were disappointed in what they got out of a guy that they've loved for a long time.
Now, I have three more people. They're all quarterbacks. And I'm going to start with the man yesterday who, hey, I appreciate honesty.
Philip Rivers.
Not Philip. Man, that'd be a weird. I really thought he'd be better. So the day after Miami season ends, Tua is asked by reporters as he cleaned out his locker room how he would feel about getting a fresh start. And he said, that would be dope. I would be good with it. Somebody from the Miami Herald says he was asked for clarification and asked if he understood the question was about playing for another team, and he declined further comment. Which, look, I'm not going to crush a person for being honest. I think he 100% understood the question and was like, yeah, that's my answer. That would be dope. But there's no question he had a disappointing year.
Yeah, that whole team was bad. Tyreek Hill getting hurt. I mean, I don't think that things were going swell before that either.
For sure.
Tyreek Hill being hurt definitely changes things. But hey, you're a quarterback that's paid all that money. You got to elevate some dudes around you, and he did not. And I don't think that, dude, here's the thing. Doesn't it go back to when he was drafted that people had that huge question mark on whether he could actually elevate that team or elevate anybody else around him?
Absolutely. Now, my other two.
They proved him right.
Maybe. This one's tough, because what I want to know from y'all is, did they disappoint this year, and will they eventually make it? J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix. Now, I know both of them dealt with injury issues as well, but I, especially with McCarthy, who even got hurt going into the last game after he came back, I can't help but wonder, are McCarthy and Penix going to be two guys that you're like, hey, you always draft quarterbacks and sometimes just don't work out?
I appreciate the work that you put in there, Kevin, for the I don't expect anything out of J.J. McCarthy, honestly. I'm just kind of like, eh.
Okay.
Yeah, so with Penix, there was a lot of excitement surrounding him. So, yeah, I can see how there would be disappointment there. I think that more than anything, if you're disappointed in J.J. McCarthy, you're disappointed that he's not getting Justin Jefferson the big numbers that he deserves.
Okay.
And that you got the quarterback whisperer as the head coach there,
right,
and somehow this guy can't stay healthy enough to be able to, you know, let the whisperer do his thing. But Penix, I think nobody expects a lot out of Atlanta. And so they're kind of waiting for that thing to turn, but he got replaced. You know, like he got to the point where you're like, you can't even play, bro.
I guess I just am like, but why don't they expect more? You got this quarterback, you drafted in the top 10, he's going to be a big deal. You have the best freaking maybe football player on the planet, at least offensively.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. People are like,
Atlanta, for some reason, it just seems like they're missing something.
Yeah.
They thought it too.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I saw that come in just now from the 806. Saquon Barkley is a great answer.
I drafted him.
I mean, and why would you not take him, like, probably number one?
Yeah.
Because you're thinking, hey, you might have just had the greatest season in the history of running backs. Or if not, certainly one of them. Because I know people get caught up in the eye-popping numbers of he had 2,005 yards. And I get that. But also consider this. Last year, he had 13 touchdowns rushing and averaged 5.8 yards per carry. That is crazy. And this year, regress, regress, regress. I get it. He eventually made his way back above 1,000 yards. That's great.
He wasn't as good as Javonte.
Yeah. Yes. Your per carry average dropped from 5.8 to 4.1. Your touchdowns dropped almost in half. Now, part of the touchdown thing can be a big thing for the offense across the board. But I think Saquon Barkley has undoubtedly been a disappointment this year.
From the 682, this person is a Niners fan. I know you guys don't give a damn about my opinion.
Oh, I care about all the opinions.
This is an NFL segment, so we're okay. Brandon Ayuk was the biggest disappointment.
Yeah, Brandon Ayuk went from a viable quality player in this league who gave you versatility to, we don't even want to have him on our roster and are willing to eat money to make that happen.
And then he was posting videos of him speeding at high speeds down the highways, endangering people. That was during the 2 weeks ago while you were out.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't remember
that. He posted a video of it. It was kind of crazy, dude.
Oh, well, that feels like an objectively terrible idea.
Somebody said Anthony Richardson. I don't, look.
Anthony Richardson is on my expectation level really low, but I get it.
Yeah.
If you did.
He's with J.J. McCarthy. That's where I would put him, is my expectations there.
Okay, so let's take another, like, fictitious Jacksonville track. If I told you that Indianapolis started the season unbelievably and it was a quarterback play, don't you think everyone would be like, I told you. I told you Anthony Richardson would do it.
Yeah, probably.
And you're like,
so.
No, actually, he went on injured reserve after he snapped himself in the eye with a workout band. I think I just made that up.
Yeah, probably so.
We're the KNC masterpiece.
Daniel Jones is the one doing it.
There's no way I would have thought any of that. Right now, we're going to transition into the Tuesday tailgate. Can you give me cut number 8, please, good sir?
Third and one, looking to throw. Launching to the end zone. Surratt's out there. Touchdown, Hoosiers. Pouring it on.
Now, as we go in to the semifinals, Indiana is a pretty heavy favorite to be the next national champion. Who is your second team?
To go in as the next national champion?
Yes.
I think Ole Miss.
Ooh, interesting. Oh, Alec, you immediately started head nodding on that.
I took the bait, man.
6-1.
I seriously think that Lane Kiffin leaving in the fashion that he did and trying to poach the assistants in the middle of the title run and everything, it's galvanized the team. I keep using that word. I really think it has, and I think they have some of the most underrated players left in the college football playoff and really just in the entire world of college football. I think Trinidad Chambliss is one of the most established and clutch players in college football that just doesn't get enough love because, yes, he is like in his 16th year in college football or whatever.
We'll talk about that in a second.
But yeah, I think people just kind of wrote them off a little too soon. And what was the Geno Smith line? We didn't write back. It's okay. You know, that's the mentality that they're taking. And I love it. I really do. I think their offense is awesome, too.
I don't know how long this process will take, but Ole Miss and Trinidad Chambliss did reach a deal for next season if the NCAA approves his pending waiver for a sixth season. So, yes, this would now be the sixth season of college football for Chambliss. But apparently it's a complex process, so I don't know when we'll actually get the answer to this. But he filed the waiver like a month and a half ago. And so now they've reached the deal with him and the school that if the NCAA thumbs up, he's back there. If not, draft.
Okay.
So there's that. But I'm glad.
Would you draft him?
Yes.
Over Fernando Mendoza?
No.
What if he beat Fernando Mendoza in the national championship game?
You know what? I might have to rethink it because then you'd be like, I won the Division II title and the Division I title. It's just Fernando Mendoza has this aw shucks mentality, and then he throws this crosser that you're like, how the hell did you throw that pass? And he's like, well, gee whiz, fellas, it's got to be the receiver.
He's a secret assassin.
Yeah,
no, I can see that. Now, that's, yeah, there's something about Ole Miss that I kind of like the defensive coordinator taking over and everybody going, you know what, we're fighting for each other in this room. Like, that looks like a real team. Miami's fascinating, though, because of those edge rushers.
Okay, and their front is really impressive. And if you look at one of the issues that the Tech had is just you're not able to get any pressure. And so I wonder if Miami will be able to put some pressure up in the semifinals. We will see if they're able to take advantage against Ole Miss, much like that's, I know Oregon is playing Indiana, but like,
is Oregon, do you feel like that game Oregon stands a chance?
I do, but that number is down to 3.5, and I know Oregon, they just had a shutout. I just look at the offensive firepower that Indiana brings to the table, and I'm like, man, if it gets into a shootout, is Oregon going to be able to hang? Which, that actually leads to kind of my next point. Have we seen, or are we in the midst of seeing, a changing of the college football guard? So, that was a dramatic. I loved it. So last year, what were you looking at? Hey, we got Penn State against Notre Dame, Ohio State against Texas. So you have teams that you feel like have been there forever. Take a look at this semifinal. Indiana and Oregon. And I know Oregon has been very good for a long time. But Indiana and Oregon have never won a national championship in football. Ole Miss won one in the 60s, and Miami got kicked out of the elite club like 20 years ago.
Ken Dorsey.
Yeah. Yes.
Didn't they win like 56 games in a row or something?
I don't know if it was that long for this run, but they won a lot in
Wait,
a row.
Wait, I gotta go Google it and look it up with AI.
So my thought is, it feels like even when Mendoza moves on, that maybe you've built something that's ready to last in Indiana.
As long as the coach is there.
Yes, that's probably fair. Is Oregon ready to finally break through for the first time? I know they lost, but with their billionaire benefactor saying, I'm here to disrupt, is Texas Tech here for a while? And you look at Indiana, man, Indiana got here by just beating the ever-loving crap out of Alabama. Ole Miss made it, despite losing their head coach, by beating what feels like had been the new gold standard of college football in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder, I'm not saying Georgia and Alabama can't bounce back, but are you seeing somewhat of a changing of your powerhouses now?
Yeah, for one, obviously, they got to take down the team that took down the juggernaut A&M. Like, that's got to be the first thing.
Hey, A&M scored more points in the playoffs than other teams.
You know what I'm saying?
I
watched that game. I watched every second of that game, Kevin.
Yeah.
I hurt
if
for
that,
you.
If that player wouldn't have needed medical attention, would they have called the rightful targeting call? Maybe.
The fact that there is a lot more money that's able to be spent freely changes this thing a lot. Because some programs have talent around. Coaches have a good eye for talent. They just can't get that one recruit that could really change it. Now that these teams, they're like, hey, I just need an extra this. Now, you got to deliver on that.
For
just
sure.
Like in the NFL.
Yeah.
If you go tell your GM, look, I need Jack Sanborn and Kenneth Murray. And if you
who would do
and
that?
Reddy Stewart, like these guys are going to
okay.
be the difference.
I
love Reddy Stewart. But if you're going to go tell them that, you better deliver on those guys. And so, like, that's got to be a factor, too. Kurt Cignetti's done it.
Yeah.
I agree. I still think he's the culture of the program. They yeah. believe because of him, he's established that within. But the fact that NIL money, that's why Nick Saban left. He was like, I can't compete with the players anymore
sure.
because they're making as much as I am. And then on top of that, I'm going to have to compete even more with other people out there that don't have quite the assets and avenues that we have. And so, yeah, as Texas Tech grows up and says, we're going to be willing to spend more and more and more. Now, here's the thing I don't know. Those are donors that have businesses.
Yep.
Their businesses are down. Are they spending that year?
You know, that's a good question. I think particularly for Tech, if you get into the billionaire club, that he made it sound like he's there for a while.
And like T. Boone Pickens
sure.
was there for
oh,
a
yeah.
while.
Yeah.
The schools, though, don't have the money to keep up. I don't think that they're willing to spend the money to keep up.
Yeah, that's two different things. They most definitely have the money. They just don't want to
yeah,
spend
it. Yeah, I mean, they got campuses to build, Kevin. They have mm-hmm. new buildings, new mm-hmm. chemistry buildings and
that's
stuff.
Right. Who do those buildings get named after?
Donors.
Exactly.
So where does the money go? What are they doing with all that money?
It goes
money
into the endowment. Doesn't Harvard have like a $5 billion endowment? What's that for?
I don't even know what that means.
Money they just say.
I'll have to Google it, obviously. I think that because there are programs like UNT, I don't know that UNT is ever going to be there, but they just saw the benefit that it brings to their community from having a successful season.
Yeah.
And so they want another one. They always have, but they just didn't have the means to be able to do it. And whenever you do have programs like Texas and Oregon that have billionaire money that they can just roll out whenever they want, it's hard to still compete with them. But if you get the right group in there, Indiana, Kurt Cignetti's shown you can do it either way.
Now, I made the mistake of not asking for a highlight. But somebody did ask, what about the other national championship game from yesterday? Sure. So you had the FCS national championship, and regulation was not enough to contain Montana State against Illinois State. I've been to Montana State. Fun fact.
The state of Montana or the college?
I did go to the state of Montana, but we stopped at Montana State. We took a picture in front of the football stadium.
Why?
At the gas station, they had Montana State Pepsi.
But why?
Because it's a university. I want to see it. It's neat.
You went to all the Montana universities?
No, just the ones that were convenient. Like, we stopped at the University of Utah because we were driving, and they was like, hey, make a left for the University of Utah. And I was like, hell yeah. And so,
dude, we don't do that enough in life.
Yeah.
We see a sign and just take that road and go see, where's it going to lead me today?
Yeah.
Where did all these roads come from?
See, you'd be proud of me. We saw the big marquee from the Montana State football stadium, and we're like, let's go.
Instead of being like, nope, that's not part of the
yeah.
plan.
Well, plus we're in Montana.
It's not on the run sheet.
So, like, what do you really... Hey! You shut up! That's a fair point.
You said
on the
you could
other
drive
part.
For miles and not see another car.
100%. We drove for at least 18 consecutive minutes and saw no car. I was worried that society had ended. Because that's how every one of those movies start. With some guy walking down an empty street. And I was like, we've saw nobody. All right, but Montana State, Illinois State. Illinois State, they score two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to send it to overtime, and then they take the lead on a touchdown. However, the extra point gets blocked, which then clears the way for Montana State to tie the game on a touchdown pass, and then perhaps the most important extra point in the history of Montana State. And they make it. They win 35-34. Montana State is your FCS national champion.
Got a text from one of our fantasy football team GMs last night late, and he goes, "You're not a real football fan if you're not watching this Montana State game." And I was like, "Oh crap!"
I get it.
Tune in.
We've had that same conversation. Now, a couple of quick other notes for you. Josh Hoover from TCU, one of the top quarterbacks available in the transfer portal. He is committed to Indiana. Thought is heir apparent for Mendoza, Alabama. They landed the number one transfer running back in Hollywood Smothers, which obviously that's awesome. Bryce Under, I'm telling you, man.
That sounds like a film.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't it?
For a very particular kind of, I hear what you're saying. Huh. Bryce Underwood will be back at Michigan, and then Zachariah Branch and CJ Allen are both going into the NFL draft. Look for both of those to, I would assume, at least be top two round picks, but we'll see if they could be even higher. And then we talked about this last week. The bidding war between Cincinnati and Texas Tech. Well, Texas Tech was victorious, and they did, in fact, acquire the services of Brendan Sorsby. I mean Tech and LSU, because he was coming from Cincinnati. Brendan Sorsby looks to be the next quarterback of Texas Tech, as they have come to an agreement as well. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, time for the C-Block, starring Corey Majors.
It's time to role play, gentlemen. Are y'all ready?
Oh, dear.
Next on the Fan.